Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. This is David Meltzer, and I am super excited. Every once in a while, I meet an executive, and from the very start, we have the same frequency. And Noah Kerner, he is the CEO of Acorns, which is right up my alley because I'm a timing and risk tolerance guy. And whenever we're talking about investments, the first questions are always related to how do we get people truly to trust their timing and risk tolerance? Then they can pick the best resources, which with your extraordinary growth, 800 employees, unbelievable investments and track record in customer service and expectations. Noah Kerner, welcome to the playbook.
Thanks for having me.
So we were talking about frequency, and you're having an offsite, onsite corporate meeting here in Southern California.
Yeah.
And this is indicative and aligned with financial investment, because in the old days, when I invested with a fiduciary or a broker, he had to come in and meet me in person. He had to have a relationship with me, play golf with me, buy me dinner. This was a given when I started to invest in my 20s. And it took me a while to get comfortable because people are different online than they are in person as well. We talked about your own employees being different. You meet some people and they have a different frequency. Has that contributed positively or negatively to the Acorns business model?
The frequency or the offsite onsite thing?
Both, because they're both relative to each other.
I think that basically, right when the pandemic happened, we went remote, and we had just built this space like right around this area. This beautiful, we put all this time and energy into it, and we were super excited.
You know what they say when you come up with a well-developed plan,
yeah,
you're guaranteed God will laugh.
Yeah. It was terrible time. And so, but I was also looking for a way to go remote because I felt like we were limited by the geography.
Mm.
And, you know, when we would meet great people from New York or San Francisco or wherever in the middle of the country, it was weird to hire them because you didn't have that, like, you know, the ability to do online, offline well. So if part of your company's like offline, parts on, it just doesn't. So we just went remote immediately, ripped off the Band-Aid and no looking back. And it's been, I think that's your, it's been great. So we have people in 40 plus states, and I'm a talent first person. So it's like, you have to decide what you prioritize when you're hiring for people. And I go after talent first. So to me, it doesn't matter as much where you are. It's like, are you the best person for the role? Are you the best person we could possibly hire? And if you're in Akron, that's great. I don't give a shit.
Right.
And then now our job is to have the best community capabilities so that we can bring people together as well as possible virtually. Because of course it's, you know, like the thing I realized this week when we're in person and you kind of forget is just that energy that happens in, you know, in person. And I was saying before, even I meet people that I interviewed virtually to join Acorns who I think are this person. And then I meet them in person and they're just a totally different energy and vibe, which is weird. Some people are the same. So then when you get together in person, I feel like you really know your people.
Yeah.
So that's a downside for sure. But like,
in evaluating talent, you're a talent first person. I'm a people talent first person as well. I'm value based is how I hire on talent. So I oddly enough, I can determine by a resume if you have the capability of learning the skills that are necessary to effectuate what I need to be done. But I look really hard at, and I ask questions about weird things like gratitude.
Yeah.
In an interview, I'll ask, how many times a day do you say thank you? Real quick.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And if they're blown away, I know they don't say thank you.
Yeah.
If they're like, say, I don't know so many times, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's like an A+ answer.
Yeah.
Because gratitude's essential. Forgiveness. So yeah. I'll ask questions about, you know, forgiveness or accountability questions are really easy. Like, tell me about the worst thing that, and who are you going to blame?
Yeah.
And rarely does someone say, blame. It's always me.
Yeah.
I'm the comment. Like, those are the A+ ones. Is there certain indicators for you, since you have so many employees, you've had such great growth, and you're known for this aligned team community, not just of people, but the people that work for the people and help the people. Are there certain things you look for when you are remotely, you know, getting this talent to help you?
By the way, I still interview everybody.
Yeah.
And I plan to always do that.
That's so good.
Yeah. Even if it's 15 minutes. It took me a really long time to figure out the most important quality that I look for, which is sense of humor.
Really?
So that's like the number one.
Dang, I'm going to use that.
Yeah, and it.
We're screwing up here. He hates this interview. Why? I have a terrible sense of humor.
No,
I'm kidding.
No, it doesn't mean you have to tell good jokes.
Right, right, right.
Just have a good sense of humor. It says so much about who you are. Also, I like to have fun with people I work with. I like my team to have fun. People who have a good sense of humor are not just more fun. They tend to be more self-aware, more aware, more connected.
Do you find there's a sense of
intelligent?
You say you don't have to be a comedian, but I find comedians are the most intelligent people
exactly.
I've ever met.
That was literally the next thing.
Oh, sorry.
No, so like intelligence, acuity, just there's so many characteristics. So I will ask, when's the last time you laughed at yourself? And
they say, when I brushed my teeth naked this morning, you're like, you're hired.
Honestly, if it wasn't like now, an hour ago or recent, like I was joking at the office, I was like, if they have a date from like 3 months ago,
you're out.
At the hour, you're out. Yeah. But that's
I'm stealing this from you, by the way. So I, you know, these are questions I've learned. I'm like the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute. I'm always looking for like the old school stuff.
Yeah.
I've never heard someone tell me they hire for sense of humor, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah. And then I ask, there's another, some of the
Where'd you learn that from?
It just hit me.
Okay.
Like it was not.
Your experience.
Yeah. Like, okay. And just personally, what I know I relate to and what I like and enjoy and to your point, the intellectual acuity, you, which is so important. I want to work with really smart people. Really smart people have a good sense of humor.
Yeah.
And tend to be funny.
Even if they don't mean to be.
Yeah. I ask another question also in this. I try to ask hard-hitting questions that don't feel like typical interview questions. And that we get a lot of feedback that like my interviews are just very different. But I will ask, tell me the most inspiring thing about you. And tell me the most annoying thing about you.
Yeah.
And I say the annoying, it's like, what are your strengths and weaknesses? No. What's the most annoying thing about working with you? And the response to that also comes back to their sense of humor. Because when I say, what's the most annoying thing about working with you? And someone doesn't laugh a little or chuckle or go, oh, that's, let me think about it. And then say, there's a lot of annoying things about me. If you say, I'm a perfectionist, also, we're not.
Yeah. What if I told you I'm repetitive and honest?
Great.
Okay, good. Because that's what I always say. I'm a great parent.
Yeah.
Because I'm annoying to be repetitive to my kids and honest.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you gotta say shit again. And I mean, you have employees. Isn't it true? Like you think they get it the first time, and that's humanly impossible.
Yeah.
So you have to be repetitive.
Yeah.
And not be afraid to be repetitive.
Probably and certainly from a market, the most important thing in marketing is to just repeat. And it's funny, people don't like to do that because it sounds boring.
Yeah.
You just have to say the same thing over and over. It is incredible how many times things get distorted.
Yeah, it's not what you say, it's what they hear.
100%. So all day repeating.
Oh man, this has already been one of the most valuable interviews I've had. I'm gonna become a greater leader for it. Here's another question. Okay, I just saw a picture of your 12-month-old son.
Yeah.
And he is the most aware, biggest personality I've seen in a long time from a picture of a baby that young, right? Like, and I know you're just starting to get it. You're a new father.
Yeah.
This is your first child?
Yeah.
Okay, just want to make sure. I have found that when we have our first child, it's one of the biggest transformations of our lives. Everything changes perspective-wise, especially if we're a CEO of a super successful big company where we have a lot of people around us and we have to be very good with our harmony of time, I call it. There's no balance of time. I know you know that already.
Yeah.
Just a harmony of time. What has been the biggest surprise for you having a baby that I guarantee you think about all the time, you want to be with all the time, but absolutely has changed your perspective on life and business?
This is probably going to sound weird because everybody says this is the
you're my favorite weird person.
The most transformative. I don't feel different.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like I think that comes, we were talking a little bit before about like, I feel like I've been the same exact person my whole life. This dress, personality.
Wow. Hair for sure.
Hopefully.
I don't got that going for me, but he does.
You know, it feels like I sort of like just shifted into it. But I would say what I enjoy most is trying to see the world through his eyes. This is something I do in the world. So a lot of people will say, you know, for the first 3 months, they don't really have much of a personality. They don't really say anything. This, he's trying to say so many things. He's looking at the world, these beautiful kind of curious, just pure eyes.
Yeah.
And I find
facial expression.
Yeah. I find myself just looking at the world with wonder, trying through his eyes, trying to see what he's seeing, feel what he's feeling. You know what I mean? So that's, but it hasn't, it really hasn't changed my view. I certainly, actually, I will say, along the path, when my wife was pregnant, I got hit by this pretty strong feeling that everything I thought was my purpose, what I had written as my purpose, was to some degree manufactured by me. And what I realized during this process was, this is really the only purpose at the most foundational level. And I'm one of these people that could have gone either way. Like, I didn't feel, I know a
kids
lot of-
Kids or no kids, you mean?
Yeah, I know a lot of people who are like, I have to have, you know, I could have not.
Yeah.
But during the process, when my wife was pregnant, I had this realization, very profound realization, that not doing this would have been limiting myself from like the fundamental purpose that, no doubt.
Okay, let's move into the investment side of stuff, because I'm someone who knows investment, and I'll tell you, I know investment because I've lost over $100 million in
investing.
In 2008, went bankrupt, lost over $100 million, made it back.
All right,
and so I studied how this happened. Took accountability for it, but I really wanted to understand and take stock in who I was and what I wanted to become as far as an investor and understanding the processes of trusting and vetting things. And I came up with one fundamental thing that I mentioned in the intro, which is most people, whether they're wealthy or not, they don't know their timing and risk tolerance. And what I learned about this and what I like about your business, because it is fundamentally something I see from the customers I talk to of yours and the people who work with you, is that you keep that alignment and make sure that you're there. And the reason I found it so important is, if you know your timing and risk tolerance, you will be disappointed, but you'll never be resentful and guilty. And when you get oversold, back-end sold, lied, manipulated, and cheated by a financial opportunity, when you don't know your timing and risk tolerance and you don't trust and vet that opportunity, then you're going to be resentful and guilty and blame them for something you already knew. How do you, because I know your reputation, and part of the reason I wanted to have you in here is that I love people that will answer these other questions apply your personality and values to something that means so much to people, which is their personal investments. And you do it so well. How do you get someone to go through and do the work so that you know you're not going to be in a realm of blame, shame, and justification?
I think that's inherent in the product, because the product, while the product is set up to try to help you make the right decisions, you are making the decisions. So you are accountable.
Right.
Even though we automate everything, you are accountable. Acorns is very, very much about accountability, a sense of ownership, a sense of agency. And, you know, I would say we try to create as many guardrails as possible. We are very much committed as a company to putting what we call the responsible tools of wealth making in everyone's hands, not just the tools of wealth making. You can tell as much about Acorns by what we don't offer as you can by what we do offer. So we don't have stock trading. We don't have cryptocurrency trading. We don't have credit cards. We don't even have loans. We are about helping everyday people save and invest for the long term. But it's as important that you take accountability for your actions as we guide you. And that's very fundamental to the product. So I think that's probably, you know.
It is something that I saw, right? Is that a lot of people use the guise of financial literacy. They use a marketing tool of low, middle, and high risk. Talk about, like, we're in the age of nutrition and holistic healing and all this, and our variables of our genetics are so complex. It's like, you take this pill, who knows what it's doing to you?
Yeah.
They don't know what else is inside of you. I feel the same thing holds true with a lot of the financial services that are available. It's like, here's vitamin C. take this much, the one a day approach.
Yeah.
That's not going to work. Like everyone has these different variables. And I find that Acorns is great at this agency of, look, let me just keep figuring out for you with guardrails what it is, and then keep these fundamentals, these principles alive for you that we know mitigate risk and provide a nice outcome if you stick to the timing and risk tolerance that you've inputted.
To me, what you would do, the supplement space is the same as the get rich quick scheme space in finance. Acorns is a get rich slow product.
Yeah.
That's the only way. You know, it's going to take 30, 40, 50, 60 years, depending on how much you put in, of course, and how regularly. But for me, it's don't even get the supplements, you know, this obsession with get healthy fast.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And the supplements.
Get wealthy fast.
It doesn't. I mean,
you got to go to the back of the line.
Yeah, of course, there's stories where it does.
Yeah.
But get rich slow.
Very rarely does it stay.
Yeah.
So I'm a get rich fast person. 9 months out of law school, made my first million. Our first exit in 1995 in the internet was $3.4 billion for West Publishing to Thompson. Mm. That's a get rich fast thing.
Yeah.
But get rich fast didn't last.
Yeah.
It didn't last because I didn't understand. Like, if I just would have used the basic principles, by the way, of Acorns when I was worth all that money, imagine where I'd be today at 57.
Yeah, but your story is great for you. It's not necessarily a great story for most people to hear.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't really happen.
No, it doesn't.
And so it's about $5 a day, every day, for 30, 40, 50, 60 years into a diversified portfolio. Obviously, we automate it, but whatever. It doesn't to me, it doesn't matter where
that's what my kids do.
Yeah.
And because they're not making money yet, most of them.
Yeah.
And even if they are, they're not making my kind of money yet.
Yeah.
Because especially because one works for me and I'm not going to pay her that much, that's for sure.
Yeah. I wrote a little piece about this. There's a lot of, and I don't know just to the extent that people everywhere in the country feel this way. I think a lot of people feel this way. There's certainly a lot of media about the fact that the American dream is dead.
Yeah.
The American dream is not dead if you take the steps necessary and commit yourself to putting in small amounts of money regularly over time, have the patience. You know, like 30, 40 years from now, if you get started today, everybody can retire with some degree of wellness, some degree of comfort and peace of mind.
And comparatively around the world, at a very good degree of wellness, 100%. Because we're in America. I'm a huge American, so and I still think it's the land of opportunity. I think it's still the only place on earth you could grow up literally on the street with nothing and have addictions even, and the country itself would provide you an opportunity to be the richest person in the world.
Sure.
There's someone lying on the street today that has an opportunity to be the richest person in the world in America. I don't think that exists anywhere else in the world. And that's what makes this country great. Let me finish off somewhere that's important to me. Selfish question, I call them. I'm the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute. Think and Grow Rich, Outwitting the Devil, How to Sell Through Life, Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Books have changed my life. And then it led to mentorship, and mentorship has changed my life. Have there been any significant content, people or books or audiobooks or movies that have had a great impact on you like Napoleon Hill has had on me?
I mean, I read a lot. I like to read all kinds of books. When Breath Becomes Air was a book that really had a profound impact on me. I find reading about medicine and profound stories about health to have a really meaningful, deep impact. But I'm constantly consuming. I'm so interested in stories and understanding other people's stories and getting inspired in whatever way I possibly can from a particular person's story and the little sort of slice of life that I can relate to. But that book, I remember reading that book on a plane, and the author had died of cancer and his wife finished the book for him. And it was just such a beautiful book. I was like, you know, sitting on the plane.
Crying.
Having a glass of red wine, crying because...
That's so good. I got to read that.
Yeah.
When Breath Becomes Air.
Yeah. When Breath Becomes Air.
Yeah.
Great book.
That's amazing. Well, talking about stories, I love stories. In human nature, we've always used stories to learn lessons. And we're given a human body and we're here to learn lessons. Lessons keep on coming until you learn them. We'll forget every single lesson we've ever learned. But it's these type of things, these interactions that allow us to remember, remind, and recollect those lessons. And why I love the playbook, why I've done thousands of interviews, is to bring out the best in people like Noah Kerner. I know the financial side, I always say, not only do you hire for talent, go ahead and align yourself with the people that are leading the companies that you want to be with and like would be like. Find someone who sits in the situation that you want to be in and ask them for help. That's what Acorns does for you in your financial security, in your financial growth. We still live in the greatest country in the world. When you have companies and leaders like Noah Kerner, you know what I'm talking about here. Noah, thank you so much for joining me. We got to do this again. We got TV shows and other shows. We're going to be inviting this guy to so many things. He's going to eventually be obligated, not invited. But more importantly, this is David Meltzer here with the incredible Noah Kerner on Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.